I remember when I was young, I was sitting in a cocktail lounge. Oh, I wasn't that young. You know, I was in my early 20s. I was sitting in a cocktail lounge in New York City, which is a sexy thing to begin with. And this girl is sitting next to me, and she's trying to be all seductive, which I didn't mind at the time. And she said, you know, we're sitting there with Manhattans. I mean, I bought her a drink. I'm a nice guy. It was the winter solstice, and what the hell? It's the shortest day of the year. And what the hell? So we're both sipping on Manhattans. Manhattans, if you're not familiar, they're in a martini glass, whiskey bourbon kind of thing with sweet vermouth, and they top it with a cherry. And the girl looks at me and she says, you know, I can take this cherry stem, put it in my mouth, and tie it in a knot. And I said, oh, interesting. She says, oh, yeah. She picks up the cherry out of the Manhattan. The cherry is dripping in Manhattan. And she seductively bites the head off of the cherry and eats that cherry in a very seductive manner. And I'm saying to myself, I'm probably not going to be going home alone tonight. It's the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. I always get lucky on the winter solstice event. Then she says, and now I'm going to put the cherry stem in my mouth and I'm going to tie a knot simply using my tongue. And I felt my pants move just a little bit. And she, for about the next 20 seconds, she's finagling with her mouth, making all kinds of, and you know, when a girl tries to tie a cherry stem in her mouth with her mouth, inside the mouth, that's not pretty. That's not pretty. That looks like someone's playing with their dentures. It just doesn't look right. She finishes. She opens up her mouth, and there indeed is the cherry stem tied in a sloppy knot. Let's call it a sloppy knot. I don't know if she would be enlisted in the Navy making knots like that, but it was impressive nonetheless for a circus act. And she looks at me and she says, you know, I can French kiss an elephant. And I said, okay, that's enough. Get away from me. Thank you. Thank you. The cherry stem story, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. The cherry stem story, ladies and gentlemen. It's not true. I made it up.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I think they are already a bit weird.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Wow.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Well, my God, thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. I am your host. Would you care for a finger sandwich? Which finger would you like? This one? It's radio. You can't see it. Do you like finger sandwiches? They're stupid. They're stupid. Do you know what finger sandwiches are? They're really small. They're the size of a finger. And it's got like one slice of deli meat on it. Or one little half teaspoon of tuna salad or something. On a tiny little piece of bread no bigger than the size of your finger. And they're just stupid. They're just stupid. That's stupid food. If you ever go to a cocktail party and they're passing around little hors d'oeuvres, that's stupid food. That's like, here's some food. Do you like it? It's a very small amount. That's all you can have. Oh, come on, man. It's like the scallops wrapped in bacon. Do you like that? Oh, I love that. I wouldn't sit down and have an entire meal of scallops wrapped in bacon. That would be silly. Maybe it would be silly. Maybe it wouldn't. Maybe I've never had that because it's never been offered to me. You never go to a restaurant. Let's say they got a hamburger here. They got the chicken parmesan and scallops wrapped in bacon, like 20 of them. Oh, no. I'm only used to having those one at a time, maybe one every 3 weeks. I'm not used to that. I can't eat that. Do you like cheese and crackers? That's stupid food, too. That's stupid food. Cheese and crackers is stupid. I mean, the more cheese you eat, the more you won't be able to go to the bathroom for at least a month. And that's not good for anybody. Cheese. I love cheese, though. They have a thing called string cheese. And I always got it confused with string beans because it sounds the same. Those things confuse me. String cheese is a long piece of cheese. It's a log of cheese is what it is. It's a personal tiny log of cheese. I eat cheese on everything. I went to a restaurant once and they had salmon with salmon au gratin with Parmesan cheese on the top of the salmon. And I thought, this isn't right. You don't put cheese on fish. That's just wrong. No. Don't do it. But it was very tasty. It was, it's amazing. It's amazing sometimes. I've told the story before. There's a restaurant in Whitman, Massachusetts. I bet you didn't even know there was a Whitman, Massachusetts. Well, there is. I can prove it. I have pictures. There's a restaurant there run by a very, very nice guy. And on the menu, he has an item that I had never had before in my life. I had heard about it, but I had never consumed it. Never would. Sounded stupid. Stupid food. On the appetizer menu, the item was fried pickles. Well, the one thing I never thought you would do with a pickle is fry it. Never crossed my mind. Pickles are too simple. They are cucumbers that have been specially treated with vinegar, and they've been there forever. Jews love them in delicatessens. They're fantastic pickles. You have them with a hot dog or something like that, deli sandwich. Simple. You pick up the pickle, you put it in your mouth, you eat it, you go home. Not a big deal. Now they fry pickles, apparently, and you order it accordingly. Nothing to me at the time tasted more disgusting or sounded more disgusting than a fried pickle. That's just absurd. I don't know if they're deep fried or just lightly sautéed in a pan. I don't know. But it said fried. I assumed it was deep fried. Pickles are not pretty things either. Pickles are kind of odd. They kind of look like the male part of the thing. They're not pretty. As a woman may tie a cherry stem with her mouth tongue, so may you say that a seductive woman eating a pickle or a banana would be in the same category. Pickles, never thought that you'd do anything with a pickle other than just eat it. So my friends are sitting there, and they said, Ron, try the fried pickles. I said, no. I have my boundaries. I don't do fried pickles. I said, come on, Ron, give it a shot. Order the fried pickles. You can have one of mine. I said, wait a minute. Oh, no, wait a minute. There is no way you're going to order fried pickles, and I'm going to take one of your pickles. That, for some reason, sounds awkward to me. Ron, what are you talking about? What's so awkward about it? Oh, I don't know. Oh, I don't know. No. You have a plate in front of you with fried pickles on it. I'm not touching your pickles. It just feels wrong to me. If I want fried pickles, I'll order my own fried pickles. Thank you very much. You're welcome. Thank you very much. So they coaxed me. They prodded me. They actually poked me in the stomach. They threatened a harm to my mother. They really wanted me to try the fried pickle. I said, okay. All right. Fried pickles were like $6 or something, or $7. And I think it was just a fried pickle. I think they just bring over a pickle. And don't even bother putting it on the plate. Just carry it over to me and put it in my mouth. What are we talking about here? Why even bother putting a pickle alone on a plate, much less frying it? You know, what are we talking about? So I'm sitting there, and about 6 minutes later, the server comes over with a plate, and it has a pickle on it. It was a basket, and the pickle was in a basket, and it was fried, and it was sitting on a piece of wax paper. Wonderful presentation. Actually, it didn't look bad. And everybody was watching me as I put the pickle closer to my mouth, and I said to myself, this is like a really bad porno film going on here. Why are you all staring at me? Can you just all go to the bathroom together? Men never go to the bathroom together. Have you noticed that? Women won't go to the ladies' room unless it's like a cattle call or something. You know, Betty, I have to go to the bathroom. Come on, let's go. What, is she going to hold your pants down? I mean, is she going to pull your dress back? I mean, what is she doing in the bathroom with you? Betty, I have to go to the bathroom. Come on, girls, let's go. I mean, what's going on in there? What are you doing in there? Last thing I'd ever want to do is go to the bathroom with another guy. Joe, I got to pee. Yeah, can you hold it for me? I don't want to hold it right now. Can you do it? Benny, can you come along too so we can talk? It's just disgusting. The worst thing is when you go to a really nice restaurant and there's a bathroom attendant. What job application do you give to a place that's looking for a bathroom attendant? Yeah, we're looking for someone to stand in the bathroom and hand out a towel, a paper towel, to someone after they wash their hands. Can you do that? Do you have experience?
Oh, yes, I've been a bathroom attendant at the finest hotels. Also, in public restrooms in airports, I will frequently stand near the door of the men's room because I love it so much. I'm not hired by them to do that. I just love to watch men walk around the men's room and to hand them things on the way out. I love that. I've been doing that on my own for years.
Wow, you're hired. Can you imagine being denied that job? I'm sorry, Dave. We can't give you that job. I don't know. You're too creepy. You don't have enough experience. How often do you go to the men's room yourself?
Twice a day?
No, sorry. Not good enough. We need somebody who's really familiar with the men's room. The urinals, the toilets, the sinks. We need you to stand there.
Can you? I could never do that job. What would I look at?
You can't look at people going to the bathroom. You see, ladies, in men's rooms, the urinals are out in the open. There's no private stall involved with a urinal. What would I look at? I'd be staring at the ceiling all day. Anyway, the fried pickles come to the table. This is some type of a disorder that I have, I believe. But I love it. Pickles come to the table. Everybody's staring at me. I put the pickle in my mouth. And this flavor comes tripping into my mouth. This odd circus-like experience of eating a fried pickle. Something that my brain still couldn't wrap around that concept. Fried pickle, why? Why? And everybody was looking at me. And I ate I had a bite of the fried pickle. I swallowed it, and they're all staring at me, waiting for my reaction. Like this is of great consequence. They said, "Well, Ron, what do you think of the fried pickle? Huh?" I looked at him, and I said, "Well, thank you for forcing me to do this. Well, Ron, what do you think? To be honest with you, it sucks. What are you talking about? This is awful."
Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show is like realizing that you put your underwear on backwards this morning. It's wrong, but it doesn't feel bad, and it's not like anyone's ever gonna find out, so just go with it. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
The fried pickle story, ladies and gentlemen, took me about 10 minutes to tell it, and the punchline, basically non-existent. That's talent. I ask you, could you sit there for 10 minutes and tell a fried pickle story without any real ending? I think your response would be, no, I couldn't. No, I wouldn't. No, I shouldn't. You can listen to this program anytime you want, or not, by going to NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, NewEnglandTalkRadio.com, SoundCloud, or your Alexa, Amazon thing in your house, you know, Alexa, what's the weather tomorrow?
I don't know, shut up.
Or you can definitely listen to it on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, the Podbean Network. Music by Jason Shaw. Thank you so much, Jason. He writes the music for this program. It's original shit. It's pretty good. John Shanahan is your comedy guy. The commercials, the bumps, they call them. The bumps. Sounds like a dance from the 70s, but it's not. We're going to be talking to the author or an author of something. There's a series of books called, this is how much I prepare for things. I have no idea what I'm talking about. There's a series of books called The Boy in Pudding Lane, I believe it is. Is this familiar to you at all? Does this sound right? I don't know. We're going to talk to that author. I like talking to authors. I'll tell you why. I'm in the process right now of writing a book myself on the very sensitive topic of frying pickles. And I am actually writing a book about life experiences, sort of. I find that when I do this, a lot of people say to me, you know, Ron, what you talk about is absolutely bizarre and ridiculous, but I do that stuff too. But I never admit it. So I decided, you know, put it in book form. Why not? Then someday I can say, look, this is from my brain on paper. Isn't that like a drug commercial? This is your brain on drugs. I think, do you remember that? You're not old enough, are you? Anyway, a series of books that I'm, to be honest with you, not that familiar with. The Boy Who Lived in Puddin Lane. This is a publisher who is bringing this book series back to life. I don't know if she's an author as much as an editor, to be honest with you. I don't know much about this. We're going to talk to her in just a minute. And then I'll find out what I'm talking about as well. But before I do that, I just want to make a short announcement. License plate number 732WOZ. Your lights are on. And when you leave the radio show and you try to start your car, it probably won't start. So it's a blue Equinox, one of those Chevy things. So go do that now. All right, let's speak to our guest for today. Hi, Pamela. How are you?
Hi, fine, thanks.
Great. Pamela McCall joins us now. The Boy Who Lived in Puddin Lane. This is a re-release, I understand.
That's right. It was first introduced in 1921, so it's a bit of an old one.
Yeah. So what prompted the re-releasement of something? Why this particular one?
Well, I was looking for something to publish, and I was looking into the folklore and the different things that have been written about Santa Claus as a little boy, and there's quite a rich history, actually, of people who've written about his family, and then I stumbled across this wonderful story, and I just couldn't believe it hadn't been re-released over all these many years. It really is quite a classic.
Wow. Okay, now, how did this... What was the attraction of the Claus family, so to speak?
Well, I mean, Santa Claus is the most famous character in history, right? He's loved the world over, and I think that people will be interested in hearing how he grew up as a little boy and who his siblings were and his parents and his grandmother. And I think Sarah Adlington, the author of this wonderful little story, brought in some very fun characters like Mother Goose being Santa Claus's grandmother and different characters. So it's a really lovely story. It sort of weaves together different nursery rhymes and different characters, and it's just got this lovely feel about it. She's a really fun writer, and I just loved working on the project.
Wow. Now, there were some illustrations involved with the original release. Were they carried out or updated? How did you handle that part of it?
No, we just enhanced them. We wanted to make the book very respectful to the classic, the original, and so we were very careful not to change the feel of it. The pages are treated in such a way that it has a feeling of being an old book, which I really wanted to create. And the illustrations by Gertrude Kay are stunningly beautiful. The end papers, when you first open the book, is this lovely spread, double spread of Santa Claus and his sleigh, and it's just a lovely illustration. And there's about, I think there's 6 or 8 illustrations in the book, and they're all like, sort of tipped in like a plate, like the original book.
Interesting. So, you know, times have changed since the early 1920s, although we are going backwards. Maybe we're going back to the 1920s, I'm not sure. But in that sense, I mean, there were lessons that were kind of underlined in the original book, although I don't know if anybody got lessons out of that. But now the lessons kind of pertain a little bit more heavily, I would assume. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, you mean like the gift giving, the
generosity, the relationships in one's family with their brothers and sisters, that kind of thing. It kind of means a little bit more these days, I guess. I wasn't around in the 1920s, I don't know, but I'm kind of feeling
no.
No, But I'm kind of feeling that there's, you know, there's a lot to get out of it even more so now. I don't know.
Well, when I first read the book, I sort of held my breath thinking, okay, will this book hold this, you know, test of time? I mean, is this going to be relevant? Is it going to, am I going to bump into something that really makes it, you know, very dated and not relevant at all? And quite the contrary. I mean, it's, Twas the Night Before Christmas, as you know, is the most famous poem in the English language. Uh-huh. And the reason that Twas has survived, you know, all of these years, it was written in 1822, is because it's all about benevolence and kindness and goodness. And that's exactly what this book's about as well. I mean, Santa Claus, this character, there's no naughty and nice. There's no, you know, pick and choose. There's none of that. It's all just kindness and love. And Santa Claus, in this story, he is a little boy, and he wants to make presents for people, and that's his goal in life, is to, you know, be able to find a way to be able to just do that, and that's his career path, is to be a giver. And his members of his family, of course, make that happen and help him. And even King Cole, you know, comes up with a castle in the North Pole. I mean, it's lovely. But I think my favorite part of the book is the end, which is about, you know, the love between he and Mrs. Claus, his new bride. And it's just such a lovely, lovely ending, you know, when she's waiting for Santa Claus to come home on his first night out. And it's just the love that she expresses for him. It's just so sweet. I loved it. I just thought it was a really great little story. And
Yeah, see, if it wasn't updated, Santa's wife would probably say, all right, now the food's cold. You just got home, and now the dinner's all ruined. But, you know, that's not what it was about.
That's true.
Yeah, okay.
No, but the other really, I think the really, I think why I really wanted to do this book as well was just this lesson in giving. And for children, and the book is not just for children, of course, but it's this lesson of giving and how to become, you know, how to really teach that to a child. And I just want to tell you a quick little story. I had, when my children were growing up and I was teaching them about money, I stumbled across a book that said, the first thing you should do is give them a responsibility with money. Give them the money to buy all the gifts that they have to come up with. So birthday presents, Christmas presents, all these things. And let them actually buy the gifts, like, with their own money. Like, do the shopping, do it all. And I did that. And to this day, my children are incredibly giving people. And I think that you know, this is the message of this book, is it can help parents or children understand, you know, how a child can get right in there and involved in the real giving of gifts. And that gift to a child is so, so important, I think.
Great story. Wow, it's true.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question here. You don't have to tell me the answer. Why is Santa Claus fat?
Sure.
Why is Santa Claus with the belly in the whole thing?
Well, when Clement Seymour wrote Twas the Night Before Christmas in 1822 in Chelsea, New York, he wrote the poem to make Santa Claus an elf. He's supposed to be a fat, jolly elf. That's what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to look like Tinkerbell, actually.
Tinkerbell wasn't fat.
We kind of morphed him. he's a jolly little fat elf. He was just, you know, that's what he was supposed to be. It's over the years that we've turned him into this father figure and this fat father figure.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of interesting. As you probably know, I did the first ever edition of Twas the Night Before Christmas without the smoking pipe, and I caught a lot of slack for that. But also, I won 8 book awards. But the what was interesting was that, yeah, it did, but the whole thing was that he was a smoking leprechaun. He wasn't ever supposed to be a smoking dad or a father figure or a human being. And so I think that, you know, it's interesting that over time we do things to these classics, either through illustration or through writing, that, you know, changes them fundamentally. And I think that Clement Seymour would be really interested to see how we had changed the perception of Santa Claus from an elf to a, you know, a human.
Yeah. But it's interesting. As you say, back in the 20s, I mean, everybody smoked. I think kids came out of the womb smoking. I mean, that everybody did, and there was nothing wrong with it back then that they knew of. So, yeah, it's just interesting how things change, and it becomes a dilemma. Like, well, do I stay true to it, or do I, you know, not contribute to that that image. It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah,
well, I mean that.
Go on.
Yeah. I, as you know, I mean, I've been accosted over that. I actually was physically accosted in a New York library.
Oh, really?
By somebody. But
oh my God!
People, oh you know, yeah, people got very excited about that whole thing, thinking it was a censorship, but it was never that. It was an edit.
Yeah.
But I think that you know, for these classics to live on, sometimes one does have to consider the modern child. And you know, we talked to 1,000 kids, and 1,000 kids didn't want to see a smoking Santa.
Okay.
So especially the ones who had smoking parents. Some of them had even written letters to Santa Claus saying, you know, can you get rid of the pipe? You know.
Wow. It's like, so, amazing that people get so emotional over that. It's crazy. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no.
No. I never thought that writing would be a dangerous profession or even editing.
But so this story on the boy who lived on Pretty Lane, it's just, you know, it was such a delight to work on it. And I you know, I am a historian, right. So I delved into who Sarah Addington was. And she's just this really interesting woman. She was a suffragette. Mm-hmm. She was one of the assistants at the women's American suffragette movement when they got the vote in New York. She was right in there. She was a first graduate of the Columbia School of Journalism as a woman. You know, I mean, really interesting woman. And interesting. So this book is not, when you read it, there's these characters have some depth to them. They have there's some really interesting little sort of personalities and all kinds of things. But, you know, inherently it really is a book about giving, about Santa, and about love,
right.
and family life, and it's just so charming. And I when I was looking for something to publish, I couldn't have been more pleased when I found this.
Yeah.
I really thought this
was
something.
I mean, I'm fascinated by it, and we're just talking here. So yeah, now you've got me interested in it, and not only because of the story and the fact you've re-released it, but I'm fascinated as to what happened back in the '20s, where people were at as far as these stories are concerned. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I think, it's interesting that it hasn't sort of the whole sort of Sarah Addington library, like she did write quite a few children's books.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that she died at 50 from a disease and Gertrude Kay died of a car accident at the same age.
Oh.
Both these women died quite young, so it's a matter of, you know, that was possibly didn't have any children, you know, and somehow these books just never really, this book never really kept going, which is really too bad.
Wow.
But it was,
You've resurrected
it. Yeah, 1921, 22, it was popular. It was in Ladies' Home Journal originally, the magazine, and then it was put into print. So back then it had a good run. But it's not the only book, of course, on Santa Claus as a little boy. I just think it's the best.
Yeah.
And when I looked at this whole idea of doing something with Santa Claus as a young child, I didn't want to write something because there is this rich folklore. There are stories from, this is almost a 100-year-old book, that have carried along. And I just wanted to sort of keep that going instead of redo it. And so that was sort of
perfect.
Interesting for me to do.
Nice. Nice job.
It's a fun one.
Yeah, that's for sure. The Boy Who Lived in Pudding Lane, and it's available everywhere. What a perfect time of year for this re-release. So, good timing. And there you go. It could be one of the premier gifts this holiday season. You never know. Thank you so much, Pamela. This is fascinating stuff. Pamela McCall, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
By the way, before we go any further, is there a website we can visit to find out more about this and other projects?
No, just the Colossal Bookseller we all know and love.
All right.
Everything's on there.
Perfect. Okay.
And it's everywhere. We just sold out our first edition, which we just reprinted.
Nice.
Which is great. And I found out yesterday there's more books have now been put back into distribution. So we're ready to roll. We've got more books, which is great. I was a bit worried there. I thought, uh-oh.
Yeah, you better gear up because, you know, it's time to, this is the holiday season.
Well, I always say real failure is when success shows up and you can't provide.
Yeah, it's not a bad.
And so luckily we've got the presses running again.
It's not a horrible problem.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Take care, Pamela.
Okay,
thanks. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, kids. There you have it with your pudding. Puddin' Lane. Puddin' Lane. I live on Jello Street myself. It's time for me to go. This has gone on far too long. But I'll be back again tomorrow with another program. I promise you that, if that's of any consequence to you whatsoever. I'm also going to look up recipes for fried pickles. Only kidding. That's ridiculous. I wouldn't do that. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.